So I thought I'd start with some updates on downtown Bloomington. A lot of construction on Kirkwood. I was surprised to see the new parking garage going up. How's everything going?
Everything at once. People trying to beat the end of the construction season and the better prices in 2015 than are anticipated for 2016. So the county has got the garage underway. The hotel on Kirkwood, kind of in its preliminary stages. And there's a lot happening, and the university trying to finish up on some road projects, the Woodlawn project out between the stadium and 10th Street, and of course South Jordan.
I thought we'd just do a quick update with Tech Park and Switchyard Park. There have been a few new developments since we last talked.
Yeah, we've selected a designer to get out and start to take, as you and I have talked about so many times now, from ideas to actual blueprints. That'll be about an 18-month process. So it's, as more stories are told about the fact that progress is being made, I anticipate that demand will start to increase, much like it did with the Beeline, that you hear about it and, well, where is it? And so it's a year and a half planning process to get into those actual blueprints, but things are beginning to move. On Certified Tech Park, we're down to really just a couple of developers to work with, and we'll determine whether or not these are proposals we want to go through with. We're looking at both housing and mixed use, the tech part, and then we're already working on utility connections.
We also have to get an update on the I-69 construction through Bloomington, really in full force right now. And I know you've said time and time again you get good updates from MnDOT. What's the latest?
That they're on schedule, and that as much as we feel like it's the height or depth of construction, if you will, it's probably going to get worse in terms of backups and traffic. And I feel for all the people who are coming from Northwest Indiana, Chicagoland, trying to get here and back home. My sister included, dropping off my nephew his freshman year at IU, to navigate all the construction on 37 and then the way back to hit the I-65 construction. MnDOT's got its hands full this summer, and so we're starting to see the closures, Vernal Pike, and of course each one of those closures, while they're all part of a state project, are having a ripple effect on local government. So the city and the county have been talking, and exactly how we're going to handle some of those shifts, and that's why you saw us expedite work on 17th Street and trying to make all the pieces fit.
Every time you drive by, you don't necessarily see any progress, but you know that they're doing a lot of work. When can motorists maybe start seeing some more normalcy on that area?
On I-69. Yeah. I don't know when they're scheduled to do that. I mean, again, they've got, you remember, that as you look at right now, some of the bridge frame is in place, the pillars and all for Vernal Pike. The overpass is starting to get built, and I assume there'll have to be some road closures for at least some periods of time as they're putting pieces in place. I assume they'll do those overnight. We just signed agreements with them about local road use. All that diverted traffic and construction trucks and all have to use local roads. And so we've now signed onto an agreement with MnDOT for how that works. Not only exactly what the routes are, but what happens after the fact, damage that might be done to local roads from the additional wear and tear. Incredible weight that's being added on by those trucks onto local roads that really weren't built for that. So that's gone pretty smoothly working with MnDOT.
As we do our weekly show, it's interesting to hear mayors talk about city budgets. Hearings started this week here in Bloomington. How's it going? Where are you in the process?
It's in the public eye, it feels like this is just the start, but it's the culmination of so many months of preparation. And while it's a little bit of an exaggeration to say that we start the day after the last budget's adoption, it's not too much of an exaggeration, because that final formal adoption will take place September, October, as it did in 2014. And then you start to settle into that next year's budget and determine what needs there are, what might have gone unfunded, where projects might need a continuation, an extension in time. So all that started at the very beginning of 2015, and we're just now getting to, and of course the City Council did a budget session with us stating their priorities. So while this week, Monday through Thursday, are the initial informal hearings, these really are not legally required hearings. These are something that the city started many years ago, and it's an informal process for the council. Even though they take a vote, it's simply a ceremonial vote. The actual formal legal adoption of the budget will take place in the early fall, probably late September, early October, depending on the council calendar. Going pretty smoothly, and I guess in part, there's good news and bad news with that. Good news because we know what to anticipate. The bad news is we can anticipate that it will be lower revenue streams than in the past, and we're sort of settling into that pattern now. When I first was elected, the tax rate, percentage increase that we were getting, our allotment, the word is escaping me, but it was about 4.8% additional property tax revenue coming into the city. Now we're at a 2.7. And while those numbers don't sound different, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you start to realize the budget you have is, for the most part, fixed expenses, you know, and structural costs. And there's not a lot of room for additional programs, new services. So if you want to start a new service, and of course with a new administration coming in, that brings with it new ideas. And if you want to bring into fruition the things you campaigned on, you've got to find new revenue sources, or you've got to eliminate existing services and shift funding. And that's always a tough trick to do too. Having done it 12 years ago, you know, it's the growing pains of a new administration. But the seeds are being sown now, because even though I'm at the helm of this budget, I won't be at the helm in its implementation. And that's that transition year that happens between election years.
How do you find that balance when you're talking about having to add services or then looking at the, just like you said, then having to cut? I mean, where is that balance?
It's a difficult thing to do. And you saw this, our city go through that. Fortunately, unlike so many other cities, that had to lay people off involuntarily and let police officers go, firefighters go, just fired people, cut services. In some places, Muncie talking about turning off streetlights or every other streetlight, things like that we've been able to cushion against by keeping a pretty high reserve in our budget year after year. So that when we did hit the depth of that recession, you know, we were in a position to offer, we did offer voluntary early retirement plans. So we reduced our overall workforce by a considerable number, about 23 people. And that gave us that room to be able to fund ongoing needs of the city without having to make any significant cuts. Very little of the kind of cuts that were made at the city level were visible to the public, unlike other communities. So that's the real challenge. Now the problem is again, we've got a growth quotient that's much lower than it was when I first came in, and I think that's the new normal. It's if that economy were to tank again, and we're already cutting back, and it would be, I think, a much more unpleasant experience to go through again.
You mentioned new revenue streams. How active is the city trying to find new revenue?
Well, we just identified the largest in city history, and that was with the $40 million bond issuance. And that is in part why that happened. Now, a lot of people look at that and will believe that, well, why didn't you fund operating expenses? Why didn't you hire more police officers? And why would you do a switchyard park or a tech park instead of hiring more people to patrol our streets or be firefighters? And the answer is because that's not the way that money was allowed to be used. TIF revenue, tax increment finance district revenue, has to be used for capital type expenses. And so we consolidated those TIFs, issued the bond. It went very smoothly. We were able to fund, in fact, for less money than we thought, that full $40 million worth of projects. So that's the kind of creative way you've got to address these things. And in the future, the same will be true. I think that the one that I wish that we had dealt with, and the next administration likely will be sanitation costs. That's something we've never really identified exactly what we want to do. I'd say there are at least three schools of thought on the city council as to how it should be handled, all of which demand increased revenues, which means either higher trash sticker fees, which nobody wants to do, or a flat fee or staggered fees that many, if I won't say most, but many other communities are doing is a flat fee and maybe stickers on top of that. So I don't know exactly what will be done, but that's the kind of, you're getting to a point where you squeeze all the dollars you can out of your existing revenue stream So you either start making service cuts or you find additional revenues.
I think that's a good segue into we have four or five viewer, listener questions. Okay. Ryan wants to know why the Planning Commission passed on the East Sunny Slopes development despite the project not needing any variances and following all of the city requests.
Well, I can't speak to why the plan. You know, a lot of people, I get that question about plan commission or any commission a lot, and you know, I've talked about this a bit. And when I make appointments to the plan commission or the council does, we don't substitute our judgment for the people who are appointed. I mean, I don't know why anyone would want to serve on a board or a commission if they were being told how to vote every time. So in my 12 years, I really can think of two times that I've picked up a phone or have appeared at a plan commission. It's just not something that I believe is citizen government. So I can't speak as to why. I would encourage people, though, to attend meetings, to participate, to sign up, to serve on boards and commissions and kind of get the behind-the-scenes view. So I apologize, I can't answer directly because I don't know.
Stephen emails, and for years there have been significant traffic issues during morning and evening commutes to and from the West Side, Tap Road, 2nd Street. The issues have been obvious, but he seems like there's not much action. Improvements have been recommended for years. What is the city currently doing to relieve traffic issues, that corridor west to east?
Sure, it's going to get worse. And that's when I-69 is built through, and it already has started with Vernal Pike being cut off. And you'll start to see, you know, one of my favorite exits over on that side is the Cracker Barrel exit, as Whitehall Plaza Crossing or something it's called. And that's going to be shut off. And so more and more people are going to become reliant upon 2nd, 3rd, Rockport Tap. And so, I mean, that's something that we were trying to sound the alarm on many years ago when we were expressing our opposition to I-69 and its ripple effect in the community. It arguably will have benefits to the community and economic development, but it's also going to lead to two things. More people living here, which will increase congestion, and fewer east-west connectors. So it's going to be more demand on fewer roads. So the inevitable is going to be increased congestion. So that's why years in advance we were building out improvements on 3rd Street, done improvements on 2nd Street. That's why we were on 17th Street, making those improvements, trying to get ahead of the curve on the anticipated I-69. So I think it's going to be tough. The county is looking at the Fullerton Pike expansion. At some year, I would assume that part or all of that will end up within city limits because of annexation. But we think there are ways to improve Fullerton as well. I don't think it should be a south side bypass like we have a north side bypass. But there are ways to improve flow there. So I no easy answer to long-term solutions when the problem is certainly going to be compounded, but we've tried to get out in front of those issues as much as we can.
Bob emails in saying we have had explosive building downtown as part of infill and reuse, which is good, but please tell Bloomington you won't leave office with the legacy of a critical need to repair roads that get damaged and the contractors not fixing the road areas they damaged during construction. He says there's general feeling that there's not a strong stand on the need to maintain our roads within the city while we grow. And you kind of already touched upon this earlier.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's certainly damage being done to roads. Now, the ones I was talking about were I-69 related, and the state will reimburse the community, and meaning the county and the city, for roads that are damaged. But and I think what Bob's question was going to is actual contractor damage, not so much state contractors working on a public project, but contractors working on private projects downtown. And absolutely, there's a toll being taken on those roads. And so there are times we will let a road bed go maybe a year longer than we might have, knowing that there's going to be so much wear and tear based on construction projects that we know are coming, and we'll wait for resurfacing projects until later. One thing the state of Indiana outlaws are impact fees. You can't assess impact fees to a contractor to say that as part and parcel of your project, you must pay this much for increased use on utilities or on roads, the impact it will have on pedestrian crossings and all the costs, signals, and all things that have to be done. Now, there are times we've, in a project, required contractors, developers to do things within their project sites, but in terms of roads and all, it's considered the normal course of business, and State of Indiana won't allow a local community to assess fees specifically to reimburse the city. The more conservative political viewpoint of that is that they are paying for that through taxes, that you're taxing people when they come into business in that area, and you're capturing that money, and then you invest it. And I'll let that be, that's what elections are all about, is where you think the balance tips.
Mark cycles to work as often as the weather permits. He's grateful for all the number of bike paths, lanes, and roads, but he's worried about maintenance issues. Mm-hmm. On some of the paths, there are a few overgrown areas with trees. Many of the bike lanes have potholes or debris. He's concerned that the city is not dedicating the proper budget and staff to maintain what already exists.
Yeah, I tend to agree with him in some fashion, that there are places that I will see, and that's, again, the good and bad of things, is we have added many miles of bike lane. In fact, I was just looking at some stats about, you know, percentage-wise, our bike ped lanes versus those of Portland, Oregon, which many people point to as a model, we're actually at a higher ratio. We have more bike ped paths, miles of bikeway per car lane mile than does Portland. And yet, that carries with it, once you've built it, you must maintain it. We're finding the same is true on side paths and just parkway paths, that it's great to build them, then you've got to maintain them. So, as I would really encourage, you know, we absolutely try to keep up with it. There's a cycle that we go through in both roads and bikeways, but I find, especially in areas that are highly trafficked by automobiles, kicks up dust, especially after rainstorms, you'll see sediment and all that sits in a bike lane, and I do think that we don't tend to maintain them in the same rapidity we do with the automobile lane. So I would encourage people, first of all, you know, that's something we're cognizant of and are working on. That's why we shifted our maintenance of the bike ped ways to our planning and transportation department, not just our public works department, that we wanted to have a transportation minded approach to all forms of transportation, not just to roadways. And so that's, I think, going to get better over time. But the other way that Mark and others can directly help is go to your smartphone and download the free City of Bloomington app and use UReport to take a picture, or simply just to send a message to us to let us know, here, obviously do so safely, but here is a limb that's down here, here's sediment, here's dust, here's whatever, pothole that we really want to attend to. There are also, I will say, that it's important to have people who are bike-minded people to directly contact us. I might drive by someplace and not readily see the same threat that someone who bikes every day does. And I'll give the best example of that over the years has been, now this goes back 4 or 5 years, but maybe more than that, were people contacting me to let me know that in some of the sewer grates, where there were long holes to allow water to flow through, and we do that purposely so that debris doesn't clog them, but it was ready-made for a bicycle tire to fit right in it. So I think we have, it was expensive, but I think we have now retrofitted all of our sewer holes with cross-hatched sewer hole covers so that bikes will no longer have the threat of, you know, the damage and injury that can be caused by that. And that came directly from the biking community to me, telling us that this is something we need to fix. So we do listen. We don't always get to things as quickly as I would like. Almost always, it's because of lack of revenue.
You also answered part two of Sue's question, but I'll ask part one. She says, Mr. Mayor, I parked in front of the Justice Building Saturday morning. The sidewalk is a mess of black chewing gum. Can anything be done?
Yeah, and that's something we have gotten to. And I will tell you another example of more and more people living downtown, the greater that problem gets. Sadly, it's not, if that was the worst of our problem, I'd be somewhat happy. But we do have a lot more pet owners, I'll put it delicately, living in the downtown area. That's created some challenges too. Again, the best thing to do is, and I do appreciate the specificity of that message because it allows us to go and look. I just, before coming in to do this interview, was talking to a downtown resource officer and to our downtown specialist, both of whom are, you know, walking that street all the time, and the challenges never go away. We've actually increased the number of people who are working on those kind of issues, but the number of people living downtown has by far exponentially grown compared to our staffing levels. So it's going to be a game of catch up, but it is important to hear. And the gum chewing problem, I know it's, seems if that's the worst problem we have on our day, it's a good day, but it is annoying, it's unnecessary, and it does reflect on the community. So it is important to us to clean it up.
Last question, students returning to Bloomington, many new ones as well, as families are moving in, what's the message from the mayor?
Do you know, I just gave one this morning. I spoke to Paul Helmke, who's got a leadership class in SPIA. It's housed in Briscoe, it's a live-in program, and I had just a great experience talking with them. I told them the two statistics that shocked me on this day in August in 2015 is that the Chicago Cubs are 18 games above 500, and this marks the 37th year ago this week that I moved to Bloomington, and I could see it in their eyes that how excited they are, how frightened, nervous they are about the uncertainty of a new place to live. And I told them all that I hope they had half the amount of fun and enjoyment out of their four-year experience that I had. But I did end with a PSA, and that was kind of the message from the mayor, and that is that they need to be conscious of their own safety. I try to encourage them to remember that they're on a college campus, but they're almost their own city. And if you pick up a newspaper or an iPad with the newspaper from any 40,000 citizen city, every day you're going to see some bad stories, some hard stories. So that they need to be conscious of the fact they're living in a new city now. And I encourage them to do things they might not otherwise do and have some fun doing it, so long as they keep their own safety and other people's in mind. And then I think they're going to have a great experience here. That's my message to the newcomers, and welcome back to everyone.